I'll begin with you, Dr. Doty. Can you define toxic leadership for us?
I define toxic leadership as leadership that is poisonous, rude, disrespectful, selfish, self-serving. We need to be clear that we are not saying that toxic leaders or narcissistic leaders are causing suicides, because suicide is a very, very, very anytime someone kills themselves is a very complex thing. But if the leadership in an organization and some of the leaders are toxic or narcissistic or selfish, then arguably they're not being part of the solution if there's a soldier that has a problem. They can be part of the problem. The purpose of the article was to continue the dialogue going on in the Army that's been going on in the Army for years now. It's about leadership and leader development. But one of the challenges that we didn't think the Army has done a good enough job of is addressing leaders who are A, toxic, and B, arguably, or I would even say pathologically narcissistic.
So you're saying it's less causal, more of an aggravating circumstance?
Can be.
What is your sense of how pervasive this is in the military? Dr. Doty?
That's very hard to say. There's no number on it, but a lot of the research that the Army has written about that talks about so many soldiers have experienced this type of leadership. I could not give you a number, but I would say it would be very, very rare if you could find a soldier who's been in the Army 10 years or more and has not experienced that type of leadership. Jeff, I don't know if you'd agree with that.
Early on in the article, we quoted a source that said 80% of the officers and NCOs had observed toxic leaders. The issue was the definition of toxicity is not simply one that I don't like you. It has much more to do with ruining a culture of the unit. I can disagree with my boss or my leader. I can find things about them that I don't agree with, but that's critically different than toxicity, which is an especially narcissistic toxicity where the focus is solely on the leader and their actions and behaviors in such a way that it destroys unit cohesion. When many of the numbers will say everyone knows what it looks like, yes and no. I think people have to learn to separate that from what is the intent. There is a distinct difference.
And that's a great point to emphasize. If a leader yells at someone for doing something wrong, arguably, it's the right thing to do. But a toxic leader, it's in their DNA. Either consciously or subconsciously, their focus is totally on themselves. They don't listen well. They're overly sensitive to criticism. They exaggerate their own personal achievements. They lack empathy. It's a pattern of behavior over time.
Well, it does certainly sound as though this is a problem that would range beyond, for instance, being an aggravating factor in a soldier taking their own life. It could even affect the operational effectiveness of a unit in the field.
It absolutely does that. Like any organization, the health of a unit is as closely tied to its outlook, its positivity, its self-image, as it were. In the negative, that also will hold true. Soldiers on a mission need to have faith in their leadership that mission has a real requirement, that it meets a real operational need.
Dr. Doty, you mentioned earlier that your report is part of a dialogue. Is there anything being done beyond that? Is the military addressing this issue in any specific way or ways?
Very much so. One of the biggest changes that's going on is the Army is institutionalizing a 360-degree feedback mechanism, which they've talked about for years and years, but now they're actually doing it and doing it, I don't know up to what level, but up to at least the brigade commander level, if not higher. And so that is the most important way to deal with this issue, because one of the things about toxic leaders is that they're able to, 99 times out of 100, their supervisors don't know what they're really like. They are able to hide this behavior. Probably the most important point to be made on this topic in many ways is that the ability to have emotional intelligence or empathy is the antithesis of what toxic leaders do. And so truly trying to understand something from someone else's perspective, which does not mean you're agreeing with them. It's very important. A lot of people think that empathy is something weak, is a weakness in a leader. Quite the contrary. It's simply understanding something from a different perspective. And toxic leaders don't do that, and I would say in most cases don't even understand it.
I think if you look at the Army Leadership Requirements model, it has character, presence, and intellect, and leads, develops, and achieves as highlight areas, but empathy or emotional intelligence is the only behavior or attribute that's identified by name. I think it's always been taken for granted that good leaders had it, and that may be the thing that you knew that separated good leaders from poor leaders, but I think now it is formalized.
Well, understanding that the chain of command in any military organization is critical, how does a private, a corporal, a sergeant even address this? Is this something they take to a chaplain? Is it something they, if they're having a problem with their squad leader, do they take it to their platoon leader? How does that work operationally?
I think what happens is, while it may be confirmed at the lower level, there are many more opportunities through command climate surveys and other operational things that can be done just by interacting, just by talking to people, just by a leader who does have empathy or is empathetic, asking and inquiring about the well-being of their subordinates, maybe one or two levels up or down.
I presume that this has, to one degree or another, been an issue throughout military culture, throughout really history. Is this something that has really come to the fore in the last 10 years?
I would contend that while it has always been present, this is more an understanding of operations over the last 10 years. Decentralized operations, as we have been running them, require a level of trust and communication between all levels of command. And because of that, if you have a toxic leader who believes that their way is the only way, those commanders have not fared well. Those who, on the other hand, have understood that a private on the ground is looking at an operational problem and have been able to, with empathy and understanding, ask and inquire and build and grow that trust, those units have been very successful. So I would contend that what is focusing this or is actually an operational requirement. Yes, the way we've operated for the last 10 years has not allowed for centralized operations. And the more you decentralize, the more trust you must foster in your subordinates and your peer group. And that has brought these instances where toxic leadership has become very apparent to the fore. No matter whether it's the Army or the military or industry, one of the things that's key is you are leading people, and you are leading whole and complete people who come to their work every day with their own understandings. And in the Army, we used to say the Army isn't a thing, it's people. If you take away all of the people, you don't have an Army. Therefore, when you keep people as the centerpiece of all of everything you're doing, then you will get rid of the narcissistic leader over time. What I find most refreshing is no longer are we hiding from this. We are facing our myriad issues head on, and the soldiers can feel it.
Dr. Joe Doty and Master Sergeant Jeff Fennelson are the co-authors of Narcissism and Toxic Leaders that appeared in the January-February 2013 issue of Military Review. Gentlemen, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.